All right, so it's perfectly fine if sometime through this talk you find yourself just going na 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 na. It just gets in your head, I'm telling you. Hey, really, really glad that you are here. Some of you are new to our church and you are so welcome here. We are a come as you are church and we mean it. That's the way we all come to God. There's no bar of entry here. It's for people like me, even as the pastor, crazy enough. And so we're so glad you're here. And today we are in this reimagined series, actually week four already of this 5-week series. Crazy how fast things go. And it's more than a series. But next week is Big Step Weekend. That's a big thing for our church, and we'll talk about it. But also, it's what we'll be talking about, not only about this project and all that, but also times in our life when we sense God calling us to make a big decision or to take a step of faith or to take a step of generosity or take a step of obedience or take a step in our relationship with God. And those moments really define our lives, whether we hold back or step forward. And so some of you are right there. Some of you know people who are right there. Let me encourage you to invite them to come and sit with you. And that'll be next week. And then the week after that is Mother's Day. So remember mom, okay? Don't forget mom. Mother's Day weekend. April Farmer from North Point Church in Atlanta, Andy Stanley's church, if you know who he is, will be here. She is amazing communicator. And she'll be talking more broadly. It'll be applicable not just to moms. We are certainly going to honor moms on Mother's Day. And then after that, Ryan Leek and I do a 3-week series on prayer. And then is at the movies. And summer is in full force. So it's going to be fun and impactful few weeks to come. As we get ready. And so as we think about Reimagine and the big step next weekend, it is a big generosity step for our church and for those of us who participate in it. And so today we're going to be talking about, well, how do we think about generosity? Because, I mean, all of us would love to be generous people, right? We all want to think of ourselves that way. But what does that even look like? Because if you think about even how you think about yourself, how you think about other people, we'd all love to be described that way. And I don't know if you've ever noticed how people describe people, but often I wonder how I get described when they describe other people, especially when people describe people by physical characteristics. They're like, oh yeah, you know Bob, maybe you do. He's kind of short and balding and kind of, you know, big around the middle. And I'm like, okay. Or Sally, you know, she's got big hair and big nose and big personality or whatever. And you're like, oh yeah, okay. And when people describe people that way, I'm always like, I wonder how they describe me when I'm not there, you know, like how do they, and I probably don't want to know, you know, right? And it's like when I was a young pastor, like really young, 18, 19 years old in Alabama, the senior pastor of the church there was incredible at remembering names. Like if he heard your name one time, if he met you one time, he was locked in for the rest of your life. Like he just, you know, which is great as a pastor, because when you meet somebody new, you know, the next week they show up and it's like, hey, and they tell your name. We're like, whoa, you know, just, which is awesome, right? How do you do that? How do you remember all these names? And he said, well, Jeff, it's actually pretty easy. So what you do is the most obvious physical characteristic of that person when you see them, you attach their name to that characteristic and you'll think about it every time. And that's what you do. And I said, oh, okay, so how do you remember my name? And he said, oh, I'd never tell. And I'd be like, okay, yeah, but just tell me. You're like, I can handle it. Tell me. He said, oh no, I'm never gonna tell. And I asked him multiple times and he never told. He's in heaven now, but I probably will never know and I probably don't wanna ever know, right? But then sometimes people describe people not by physical characteristics, but by like character traits. Sometimes those are not so great. Like, oh, they're grumpy or they're whatever. But sometimes it's, oh man, they're so kind. They're so joyful. They're so generous. They're so, right? And wouldn't it be great to be described that way? Like just like the song we just heard, kind and generous. I mean, wouldn't it be great for people when we're not around and we're being described that they're so kind and so generous? I mean, we all want that. In fact, that song's an emotional one for me. It came out in the 90s. I was a young adult. And my dad, I think of, he's in heaven now, I think of every time because he was so kind and so generous and so giving. And I would hope that other people would see me that way too, right? I'd love that. And all of us want to be generous. And I think we all see ourselves as generous. I've never met somebody who said, oh yeah, I'm totally like selfish. I'm not generous. I mean, we all see ourselves as kind of generous, right? And we want to be even more. But how do you know if you are or not? Because yeah, you may be more generous than the person behind you right now, but maybe not the person in front of you. Like it's a relative thing. So how do we even know? And there's actually a lot at stake in that because, you know, Jesus taught that generosity is where it's at, not consumption. And the Bible talks a lot about generosity, not because God is hard up for cash and is trying to get something from you. The reason that Jesus talks so much about generosity is to give something to us. And that is the key to a full and meaningful and joyful and impactful life. But in a consumer culture, we're told the lie that all that comes from consuming. But you'll never consume your way to a great life, to a joyful life, a meaningful life, a significant life. And what Jesus let us know is you can only generous your way there. He said it is more blessed, more happy to give than to receive. He said the only way you'll find real life is to lose the one you have. He told us to lay down our life for others, that's how, that generosity is kind of the key to the whole thing. And even if you're not a Christian, on the way to church today, I was listening to a podcast from an atheist who is a very wealthy guy, started a lot of companies and is a professor and author. He's, you know, worth hundreds of millions of dollars. He just wrote a book on generosity because what he's learned is, you know what, you're never going to consume your way to anything great. That what he's learned the hard way is it's all about generosity. And he's reordering his life around that. But what does that look like? And the good news for us is that we don't have to figure it out on our own, because the Bible doesn't just inspire us to generosity, it also equips us. And so wherever you're at in your journey with God, let me encourage you, just be open to what the Bible says, what Jesus passes on. And when you look in the Bible, there's three kinds of generosity that are highlighted, and I think all three are wonderful. The first one is spontaneous generosity. I'll just like barely talk about the first two, and then we're gonna focus on the third. But spontaneous generosity is the kind of generosity you see a need, and you're like, ooh, I want to do something, right? And you're like, get out your wallet, or you decide, oh, I want to help you. And Jesus talked about that. He talked about, hey, if you see somebody in need and they don't have a coat, and take off your coat and give it to them. Or somebody who's hungry, somebody who's in prison, you know, you go visit them, you go help them. Somebody's thirsty, you give them a glass of water. Spontaneous generosity is something we should all live open-handed. And actually, Americans are really pretty good at that. And that's why when different things happen all over the world, Americans are really quick to say, man, I want to do something. I want to be part of that. It's why commercials work, like on late night TV. You know, when you see the commercials with the dog that's shivering, and the Sarah McLachlan music comes on that's real emotional, and the dog's there. That always drives me nuts because I'm like, just quit, stop the commercial and somebody put a blanket over the dog. Like, why are you letting the dog suffer for the commercial? If you really like dogs, like, come on. But I know they're trying to get money because they do like dogs, right? But it's like, I'll give you 20 bucks. Just take care of the dog, you know, right? But people do that. That's why they do the commercials, because they work. That's spontaneous generosity. It's great. Another kind of generosity is Americans aren't so oriented around, but it's really powerful, and that is systematic generosity. Systematic generosity is what the Bible teaches, Old Testament and New Testament, to actually build our budget intentionally around generosity, to live on less than we make so that we can not only save for the future, but also give. And the Bible, Old Testament word for that is tithe. But it's a percentage that you choose and say, I'm going to actually build my budget around generosity. And it was really interesting because that podcast I heard from the atheist, he was talking to a Christian who was describing the concept of proportional giving, like tithing and percentage giving. And this guy was amazed by that. And he's like, now that is real generosity. Because he's like, what I did is I got really solid, bulletproof financially, and now I'm generous. But what you're talking about is being generous when you're not bulletproof and when you still have needs and you just say, I'm going to give a percentage of my income. And he said, that That is significant. That's a different kind of generosity. He was fascinated by it. He was like, wow, that's something to think about. That's amazing. I'm not that generous, but I would love to be. But that's systematic generosity. And then the third one is the one that we're focused on today, and that is what I'll call sacrificial generosity. You could call it special generosity, because here's what I mean. I mean, there are times every once in a while where there will be a significant enough need or a significant enough opportunity in a community of faith like this that we're called on to say, God, what would you want me to do to be part of this big need or this big opportunity, a sacrificial, above and beyond our regular giving kind of generosity? And like Reimagine is an example of that. I mean, Reimagine is a generosity opportunity for all of us who are willing to participate. And I know not all of you are into it right now. You know, you're like, hey, I'm new. I've got big needs myself. Or, you know, maybe you're kicking the tires of Christianity and you're not necessarily going to be part of the financial part of this. But most of us will be. But how do you think about these times? Because actually it's these times that are the most spiritually significant. And I've seen that over the years as a pastor. I think it's why God doesn't just do it himself. Like when God puts a big vision, like Reimagine. I mean, this is a $20 million project, which is a lot. And it means all of us who are willing taking a step. And it'd be awesome. I mean, I got to admit, if God just said, hey, you know what? Don't worry about it, Jeff. A bunch of angels are going to bring briefcases full of money on Monday. You're going to be fine. I'd probably say yes, but I shouldn't. Because it's the process of this kind of generosity is, I've seen over the years, that more spiritually significant things happen for people who are involved in these kind of projects. And certainly in my life, this is my fifth one to be part of. And I'm looking forward to what God's gonna do in our life as a result of that. And so how do we even think about these kind of projects though? And we're gonna look at a passage in the Bible that helps us, but I'm gonna encourage all of us this week, because next week is Big Step Weekend. So this is not the only thing we'll do, so don't avoid church if you're not gonna participate in the project. But for those of us who are, we will do Big Step Weekend. And part of that is we will make our pledge over a 2-year period, what we believe above and beyond our regular giving, God is calling us to do to be part of all that we've talked about. And if you don't know what we're talking about, go back and watch the previous weeks to understand the vision of Reimagine, or go on the website and see. So how do we get ready for that? Well, I'm gonna encourage us to do 3 things. Surrender, listen, and obey. And by surrender, just this week, spend some time talking to each other, spend some time in prayer, and say, God, first I surrender. Everything I have is yours. For those of us who know Jesus, like everything I have is yours. And God, help me listen to you. I wanna do what you want, and then do it, obey. And then the listen part, the other piece of good news is we don't have to guess either, because the Bible gives us wisdom how to think about these kind of giving opportunities and these generosity opportunities. It talks about it. Because there are 4 of these kind of projects, like Reimagine in the Bible, above and beyond regular giving, special giving projects. 3 in the Old Testament, which are building buildings, the tabernacle, the temple, and then the temple gets destroyed, the temple again. And then in the passage we're gonna look at in 2 Corinthians is about a unique need, where there's this famine that happens in the area where Jerusalem is, and Paul is writing to the Corinthian church and really all the churches to say, hey, above and beyond your regular thing, this is a big need and you need to give. And he tells us how to think about this. So I don't have to make it up. All I have to do is just say, okay, I can just plagiarize God, because he told us, you know, how to think about this. So in 2 Corinthians 8, the first principle that I pull out when we think about these kind of big steps and projects, if we're open, and as we're praying about, okay, how should I give to something like this, is to give sacrificially. Here's what Paul talked about at the beginning of that part of 2 Corinthians. He says, and now, brothers, we want you to know about the grace that God has given to the Macedonian churches. Out of the most severe trial, their overflowing joy and their extreme poverty welled up in rich generosity. For I testify they gave as much as they were able, and even beyond their ability, entirely on their own, they urgently pleaded with us for the privilege of sharing in this service to the saints. And they did not do as we expected, but they gave themselves first to the Lord and then to us in keeping with God's will. So we urge Titus, since he had earlier made a beginning, to bring to completion also this act of grace on your part, because they had made a pledge a year before. But just as you excel in everything, in faith and speech and knowledge and complete earnestness in your love for us, see that you also excel in the grace of giving. He's talking about the Macedonian churches to the Corinthian church and about the Macedonian spirit, which was amazing because these were people who were in extreme poverty. And I think what was happening is Paul was giving them a pass. The other churches that were not in extreme poverty, he's saying, hey, we want you to give to this region that is facing a real crisis. But to the Macedonians, it's like, you know what? We're not even going to mention it because, you know, you're in bad shape. You're, you know, so don't worry about it. And they heard about it. And they urgently plead, beg, he says, for the privilege of sharing this service. They're like, you are not going to leave us out of this. We're going to participate. And he said they gave not only according to their ability, but beyond their ability. And that's sacrifice. And by nature, this kind of giving is sacrificial because, you know, we talk about give, save, live, and systematic generosity. Well, if you give to something like this, it's above and beyond that. So that cuts into your save or live, and that's sacrificial. And I know I remember years ago in the second campaign, I heard this story that really challenged me. And changed for Christy and me, our pledge that year to make it, it was generous and it was more money than this, but it wasn't yet sacrificial. And here's the story. So At the time, there was an occasional mentor in my life who was a pastor of a very large church in Chicago. It's called Willow Creek Church, if you're familiar with churches. And I would spend a little bit of time with him a couple times a year. And they were doing a campaign when we were doing a project like this, but that was a bigger church and a bigger campaign. This was a $52 million campaign. So it makes our $20 million look kind of dinky. But they were doing the same process. It was a three-year thing. Ours is a two-year. But there was a single mom in the church who was sitting there thinking, well, great, like $52 million. Like, what am I going to do? I can't give $52 million. There's nothing I could do that would even make a dent. But as she prayed about it, she thought, well, no, I want to do my part. All I have to do is my part. There's a lot of people, and if everybody does their part, we can do this. And so she started just getting creative and think, okay, what could I sacrifice? Because I don't have like margin, and what could I do? And so she thought about it. She thought, you know, every day at lunch, she worked at a hospital next door, there was a Wendy's. Every day at lunch, I get two things off the 99-cent menu. She said, that's probably not the most healthy thing to do anyway. And I could stop doing that. And she calculated, if I stopped doing that and instead brought my lunch, which does cost some money, she worked it over 3 years, that she could pledge $760. And so that was her pledge. She wrote $760. Well, the cool thing about that is that when they counted up all the pledges, they did not get to $52 million. They didn't reach their big goal. Which is pretty typical, right? And, you know, you get what you get, and then you go with it. But anyway, they didn't get the $52 million. But their board had set, by faith, a go or no-go line. And basically, that was underneath that. And what they said is, if we raise a dollar above that line, we will know God is in this, and we'll move forward. If we do a dollar less than this, by faith, we'll know, you know what? That's just not the right project or not the right timing. And so when they counted all the pledges up, they were a little over $500 over that line, which meant, as he was telling the story, really her gift, her pledge, is what put him over the edge and allowed them to move forward. And I just say that because it takes every kind of gift and every kind of sacrifice. Some people a lot, some people just based on ability and all that. All of us are different. And so as you're praying about it, pray, or another kind of project like this, then say, okay, is it sacrificial? Because it costs a little bit. Does it cost me something? So like for us, I mean, for Christy and me, you know, I was going to get a car sooner, but I can wait. It's a Toyota. It's got a lot of miles on it, but it can do a lot more. You know, we're giving enough where it kind of cuts into the retirement thing. And it means I may be your pastor a little bit longer than I planned, you know, and something like that. So a couple people are clapping. Some of you are kind of, you know, throwing up in your mouth, but that's fine. So that's the first one. The second one is to give by faith. And that's really when this gets fun. It's when you're willing to stretch a little bit because God is ready to do stuff and he responds to faith. And here's what he says. And God is able to make all grace abound to you so that in all things, at all times, having all that you need, you will abound in every good work. As it is written, he has scattered abroad his gifts to the poor. His righteousness endures forever. Now he who supplies seed to the sower, the planter, and bread for food will also supply and increase your store of seed and will enlarge the harvest of your righteousness. You'll be made rich in every way so that you can be generous on every occasion. And through us, your generosity will result in thanksgiving to God. What he's saying here is really cool. He's saying God is ready to live, help us live like this. He's saying, look, you and me, okay, when I say you, I mean me too, okay? You focus on generosity. You focus on giving and allow God to focus on providing. Meaning you give. You're like, well, how's this gonna happen? All that, that's not your worry. You give and God will give you seed to sow. So God, let God worry about provision and you worry about generosity, which takes faith, especially when like a pledge and all that. You make, well, how's that gonna work? And all that, God says, just come on, just do it. Let me show you what I'll do. It's the coolest way to live, but it's not an easy way to live. We kind of do the other thing. We make sure we're provided for, and then out of that, okay, now I'm set, then I'll start to give. But God, what God is saying is, that's a lame way to live. Just like the atheist, you know, hundreds of millions guy that I was talking about earlier. That's what he did, right? I'm giving out of my, I make sure I'm all set, and now I'll give. And what God is saying is, yeah, come on. You focus on generosity and let me pour my generosity in your life so that you can give. Now, that should be natural for me, but it's not. I'm better than I used to be. But it should be natural because my mentor, who passed so much into my life when I was in high school and in college, I haven't talked about her in a while, but her name was Miss Helen, godliest woman I've ever been around, person. I've ever been around, and she was in her 70s and 80s in that time, and she's the one that showed me how to walk with God. As I've shared before, she's the one that taught me, like, what do you do to build a relationship with God? I didn't know what to do. And so she bought me my first journal, and she showed me how to read the Bible. I'd read a chapter of the Bible and say, God, what are you saying to me? And I'd write that down, what I believe God was saying to me from that chapter of the Bible, and then I would write down a prayer. And every Thursday night, sometimes Wednesday night, but sometimes Thursday night, I would go to her house when I was in college, and I would bring dinner, and she would read from her journal what God had taught her, and I would read from my journal, and she was acted like what I said was the most profound thing she ever heard. I was 18, 19, you know, years old, and it wasn't profound, you know, but she was so encouraged. She'd be, oh, that is amazing. I'm gonna write that in my journal, that God loves us. That's amazing. I think that's incredible, you know, whatever, right? Something so basic, but that was her. Well, anyway, I found out one time I was leaving, her brother was coming into the house and I was leaving. And so we talked outside before he went into the house. And she said, you know, I'm really concerned about Helen because, you know, I'm an accountant and we're doing taxes and all this, and her expenses and her income, they don't match up. She has more expenses than income. She lives on Social Security, and I'm just concerned, you know. And so I was like, oh, okay, well, that's good to know. So, I mean, I was a college student, like I was wealthy, but I got together a few $100 in cash, and I put it in an envelope, unmarked, because I wanted it to be anonymous, and I go on Sunday, and I slip it under her door and leave. And then I come on Thursday night, we do our whole thing, journal, dinner, and as I'm about to leave, she said, oh, wait a minute, before you leave, God gave me something for you this week, and I'm so excited about it. And she hands me this envelope. And she said, God gave me this so I could give it to you. And I was like, Miss Helen, I don't think so. I know you know God better than I do, but I think you got your wires crossed. I think God gave this for you. Like, she said, no, that's not why God gives. God gives money so that money is seed. And God provides seed for the sower. He provides resources so that we can be generous. His job is to provide, our job is to be generous. And so this is my opportunity to pass it on to you. And God gave me this opportunity. I'm so happy about it. And I said, Miss Helen, really? I really, really don't think. And then I made a mistake. I said, I don't think the person slid it under your door for them. And then I was like, oh, because nobody talked about that. And she said, Jeff, you don't worry about me. God's job is to provide for me, not you. You let him provide, and you let me give, because he's the provider and he's always provided for me. And I was like, okay. So I ended up taking it. And I remember the last thing she said when I was walking out the door, Jeff, what you will learn is you will never outgive God. You will never be more generous than him. And that's the opportunity we get to learn when we choose to live by faith. It's bold, but that's how we get stretched. And so these kind of opportunities are an opportunity to do that, because after a while, regular giving just as regular, just happens. I mean, automatic for a lot of us, which is great. That's all good. But this is an opportunity to take a faith step beyond that. Another principle out of the passage is to give cheerfully. Do you remember some bozo saying, don't give grumpy money a couple weeks ago? And it's from the Bible. 2 Corinthians 9:7, each man should give what he's decided in his heart to give, not reluctantly or under compulsion, for God loves a what? Cheerful giver. He loves a cheerful giver. So pay attention to that. Give what you can give cheerfully. If you can't participate cheerfully, well, don't. If you can, whatever you can give cheerfully, do that. And cheerful doesn't mean easy. It's not easy to sacrifice. You'll feel it. It's not easy to give by faith. That's scary. So it's not easy, but it's what can you do that's a faith gift, sacrificial gift that also is cheerful. There's a cheerfulness to it. I don't want anybody giving to a project like this out of manipulation or guilt or shame or compulsion or something. That we don't need that. And so you just pray. And like he said, do you decide in your heart to give? Just in the Old Testament, it was the same way. In Exodus, when they were giving to the tabernacle, Moses said, this is what the Lord God commanded. From what you have, take an offering for the Lord. Everyone who is willing is to bring to the Lord an offering. Everyone who's willing. And so that's the same spirit around here. Another principle from the Old Testament, speaking of the tabernacle in Exodus, is give creatively. Catch this. This is kind of crazy. He says, from what you have, take an offering for the Lord. Now, people just gave like money, but you know, the economy was different. So he said, everyone who is willing to bring to the Lord an offering of gold, silver and bronze, blue, purple, scarlet yarn, fine linen, goat hair, ram skins dyed red, and hides of sea cows, manatees, acacia wood, olive oil for the light, spices for the anointing oil and for the fragrant incense, and onyx stones and other gems to be mounted on the ephod and breastpiece and so on. They brought all kinds of stuff. And what I've seen over the years with these kind of big projects is people getting creative. Now, don't go kill a manatee and because they're endangered. We don't want manatee skins, and I don't know what we do with goat yarn. But just, you know, people, it's been fun to see how people have been creative over the years. Some people have actually even gotten like part-time jobs who didn't work or who did a side hustle or have done that. Like, because I don't know if you realize this, but the reason we're sitting here right now is because, or if you have an online presence right now, is because in the past, whether it was Imagine or Go Boldly or these projects, leaders gave significantly so that we could be impacted. And we're the fruit of that. And I've been part of all of them and excited to be continuing part of all of them. For a lot of us, it's like, yeah. And now it's our turn to say, okay, I want to bless generations beyond me. It's a cool thing. But people got really creative with it. And in a lot of cases, to give these kind of gifts. And even things like, you know, Christy and I right now are giving mostly appreciated stock because that's a lot better way to give, you know, than if you give out of savings because, you know, you don't pay capital gains and it's all that. So just think creatively, and it's a principle. Another one is to give expectantly. And this one's a cool one. And this is Miss Helen saying, hey, you can't outgive God. Just try. Paul said, remember this, whoever sows sparingly will also reap sparingly, and whoever sows generously will also reap generously. That God will respond generosity to generosity. So it's like, well, how much generosity do you want God to pour in your life? You get to decide. He responds to our generosity. He supplies seed to the sower. And that's the cool part of this, is saying, okay, here we go. Like this, we started this with, whoa, baby, here we go. Remember that? Let's say it. Whoa, baby, here we go. And this is one of those moments in life. Now, I want us to get even more specific than this because as a pastor, I tend to be kind of abstract. And I want us to hear from one of our board members, one of our leaders, and by board, I mean like governing board. We call them elders because that's what the Bible calls them. But it's like our board of directors with spiritual responsibility on top. And by the way, some of you are new to our church, or new to church period, and you may wonder, well, how are decisions made about where money goes and all that? Because there's honestly a lot of churches with really bad accountability structures. I mean, when I remember when we sold a building one time, I'm so glad it didn't work out to be them, because there was one pastor and his wife, and we found out they owned the church buildings of their campuses, and they were the board. So he looked at his wife and he was like, well, hey, he said, well, first I need to have a board meeting. And he looks at his wife and he said, well, board, what do you think? I was like, wow. But there's weird stuff out there. And just so you know, we're not like that. So we have a governing board. I'm not the head of this thing. That board is. They're my boss. We have a governing board. We have an executive team that I do serve with as well on our staff. The governing board has a financial committee with some people on that board, with our financial director and one of our executive pastors, as well as a couple of people who are in our church but who are gifted in that way, who oversee how money flows and how money is spent and what happens. And we have an independent audit every year from an outside organization to make sure that every penny is accounted for and that it goes where it's supposed to go. And the reason we do that is because every penny that's given here is given in worship to God. And I want to make sure that we are really, really good stewards of it. And so that's part of our accountability structure. Jeremy, come on up. He's on our board. He's one of our elders. And in fact, let's thank him and our whole elder team for their service. And walk us through more specifically. Thanks.
Absolutely. Thanks. So I'm going to try to bring some method to the madness, because you hear a big number, 20 million, and you get inspired by Jeff pretty easily because he's a very inspirational speaker. But a lot of people need a little bit more detail, and so I'm going to try to give you a little bit more detail in a couple of minutes. Obviously, next weekend is a big weekend. This is a $20 million campaign, and that breaks down, because that's a very big number, but it can break down to the individual level. So we have a table that we will put up on the screen that I think will help all of you guys be able to, I don't know, see it in a way that might apply directly to you. So if you think about a church our size, so first of all, 20 million, where did that number come from? And I can tell you, over the course of the last year, 2 years, as rebranding and then reimagine have happened, there's been lots of ideas about what we can do. And every one of those ideas, of course, has a price tag to it. And so over the course of the last 6 months, 9 months, the elder board and the staff have been trying to figure out what are those ideas that sort of make the cut for our campaign that we're doing. And so there's been a lot of thought and prayer about what went into that. The other part of it that's important to understand is this is our fifth campaign. So we have some experience to draw from in how these are done. But churches that are doing capital campaigns, a benchmark for what a campaign that's over a couple of years is usually looking at twice what your annualized budget is. And our annualized budget around here is about $12 million. And so if you think about twice our $12 million, that's $24 million. We intersect that with the projects that we felt like made sense. And that's where the $20 million came from, if you were wondering why $20 million. Believe me, there was a lot more ideas than $20 million. And maybe there'll be more campaigns down the road. We'll see how that goes. But this gives you a sense of where the 20 million starts and then each of us and how we play into this. Now, it's important to look at this and not say, where am I going to be on this chart? That's really not what we're trying to show. We're trying to show that every single person has a role to play, much like the example that Jeff gave for the person at Willow Church. There's going to be some people that have great ability to give large dollars. Are those people giving sacrificially? Only they really know. And there's going to be some people that don't have a lot of dollars. Are they giving sacrificially? Only they will know. And so the point is that every single person on that table has a role to play in this overall $20 million campaign. And so to prepare you for what will happen next week, there's a couple of things I want to say. First of all, just a very practical thing. Next week, the weekend services and online, I'm sure there's a way to do this online too, you'll receive a pledge card. And it's just very simple. We want to capture your information and really how much you're looking to pledge. If you're around here in prior campaigns, we actually ask for more information that's on here. And really, at the end of the day, we really just need to know who you are and what amount you're talking about. It is also important to understand that this is a two-year campaign. It's three tax years, if that's meaningful to you and how you do your charitable giving. Three tax years, but it'll start this year in 2024, 25, and 26, but it's over a two-year period of time. Why is that important? Well, many of us, whenever you're thinking about cash flow, you think about it on a monthly budget or every 2 weeks with your paycheck or however that works for you. Many people will think about giving a number and then sort of dividing it by 24 to come up with what that monthly number might be. So that is as important to understand. It's a two-year period of time. And it helps us to understand when and how that's going to come in, but we've also built in some, when you look at the actual projects, the way the large dollar items come into the amplification of this program and product, what we're gonna sell, effectively, the bigger parts of this are towards the end. And we don't even have all of the land yet identified yet. So the point is that as the money starts flowing in, we can shape this campaign to the size that it fits, because we may get a lot more than $20 million too. But the really cool thing about the way the two-year campaign works is that we just need to know how much you're going to be able to give or pledge this campaign now. Now, if you're like me and you've gone through these before, you may have heard what I'm about to say, but many people, this might be the first time. And so I want to talk a little bit about the tension between willingness and ability. Willingness and ability are two big words here that we really want to dive in a little bit. So I'll start with ability, because most people can really resonate with it. Ability is, if I pledge $1 million and I am a minimum wage worker, that probably doesn't sync up, right? It doesn't work. So you have to be realistic with what is your ability? What is your income? Do you have assets? Some people will give out of assets. They may have saved some money. They may have an extra car. They may have some real estate. They may have some inheritance. They may have a lot of different things that are assets. And those assets could be monetized in a way and they could be given. Other people will look at things from a cash flow perspective and say, I could not spend 99 cents twice at Wendy's and save that money. Or I could, anticipating that I might get a raise every year, I could go ahead and say, hey, that 3% raise that I'm going to get at my job, I'm going to earmark that, even though it hadn't happened yet. So there's a lot of creative ways that you can get at the cash flow side of this, and then there's lots of creative ways on the more asset-based giving, and that really gets into your ability. The other side of it is willingness. And so the willingness part, it can be emotional, right? You can get fired up with what we're talking about with Reimagine. And that willingness is really where you don't want to have grumpy money. You want to be giving cheerfully. And so you try to figure out how to bookend the two things. Because usually whenever you're thinking about this the first time, it's not the same number. Your willingness and your ability are two bookends. And so the way to, I think about this over the course of the week, or if you've been here the whole time, you probably have sort of already started this journey, is that you surrender, you listen, you pray, you talk to your spouse or your family that may be involved in this situation, and you just live in that tension. What is your ability? What is your willingness? You talk about it, you pray about it, and you might have two numbers, two bookend numbers. And you just listen and pray and iterate again. And you know what will happen? Before long, those numbers start to meet each other. And then we come to next weekend where you have listened, you've surrendered, you've prayed, you've talked about it with your spouse, your family, and you have your number. And I would say that if you don't get to an agreement with your spouse, take the lower number. That's just marriage advice. So take the lower number if you can't get to an agreement, because we don't want to cause any kind of tension in a relationship that's so important with this. Even though we know that this project is God-ordained, we also know that marriage is God-ordained too. So we don't want to cause any kind of tension with that. So the last thing that I just want to say is, as we are thinking about getting ready for next week, The idea of excess, I think, it permeates our consumption world right now. And so I think about this with my wife And we've had the benefit of knowing about this for a while. And so I can tell you, we had two different numbers. And I'm a financial person, right? And so my wife often defers to me in this. And I said, no, I need to know. My wife's name is Laura. I need to know what your point of view is on this. And so we talk about her point of view. We talk about how we've done this in the past. And then guess what? The numbers are coming together. And then I get inspired again, and the number gets bigger. And then we come together, and we talk about it again, and we listen, and we pray, and we talk about it. And by the time next weekend rolls around, I know that God is going to deliver that number for our household in a way that we'll talk about with our college-age kids, how we're doing it, why we're doing it, so that they can feel the philanthropy part of our household and how we roll. But that is how my family is doing it. It's how we've done it the last five of these campaigns over the course of the last generation. For many of you, you see the word reimagine. And it's a really poignant way to describe this campaign, because the first one that got us here was the Imagine campaign 17 years ago. And so that Imagine campaign is now reimagining as we go reach the next generation in the regular rhythm of their lives in a way that takes the nuns and starts to bend the curve back. Bend the curve back so that we are reaching people in a way that is relevant in this society. So really with that, Jeff, we'll turn it back over to you, but hopefully that's been helpful in how I think about it, how you can think about it, and get you ready for next weekend.
Thank you, Jeremy. Yep. So again, next week, Big Step Weekend, and I think God has a big step for all of us, either now or around the corner. And so come ready as we look at, hey, when we're at times like that in our life, irregardless of this campaign, just in other parts of our life, those defining moments, how do we think about those? And then for those of us who are willing to participate, well, we'll do our step as part of this project. And I'm always encouraged by the Old Testament, that example, because here's what happened with the tabernacle on their Big Step Weekend. It said, then the whole Israelite community withdrew from Moses' presence, and everyone who was willing and whose heart moved them came and brought an offering to the Lord. And then when they brought it, here's what happened in Exodus 36. They received from Moses all the offerings the Israelites had brought to carry out the work of constructing the sanctuary. And the people continued to bring freewill offerings morning after the morning. So all the skilled craftsmen who were doing all the work on the sanctuary left their work and said to Moses, the people are bringing more than enough for doing the work the Lord commanded to be done. And then Moses gave an order, and they sent this word throughout the camp: no man or woman is to make anything else as an offering for the sanctuary. And so the people were restrained from bringing more because what they had already done was more than enough to do all the work. Wouldn't that be cool, right? If we said no more, all that. Who knows what'll happen? We'll go as far in these projects as we go next week. I mean, that's just the way it works. And whatever that is, that's what we'll do. And we'll move forward with what God has called us to do. So please be praying about it this week for those who are open. And it's just one of those moments in the church that we'll look back on, just like so many of us look back on Imagine and say, wow, it's amazing what God has done. I'm so glad I got to be part of that, and because it is really cool. So let's, in that spirit, let's bow our heads together in prayer. And God, I do. We talked about surrender, listen, and obey, and we do surrender our lives to you. I mean, those of us who are yours realize that our whole life is yours. Everything we have, it's not ours, it's yours. And so God, help us listen to what you want us to do with your resources and this opportunity. And then help us obey, to take a step of faith, take a step that's scary, to take a step of sacrifice that costs us something. And as a church, God, we also surrender to you. It's your church, not our church, your church. You're Lord of the church. And help us to continue to be able to listen to you and live in obedience of what you're calling us to do. And Father, we thank you that you never stand still. It's never boring following you because you keep moving. And help us to take whatever step you call us to take as we follow you. In Jesus' name, amen.